Housing for the Aged Action Group, HAG for short, a housing group for older people run by older people. Present
Raise the Roof!
We advocate for secure, affordable and appropriate housing. So listen up on the second and fourth Wednesday of the month at 5:30pm on 3CR 855 on your AM dial.
That's right, you're listening to Raise the Roof, the Housing for the Aged Action Group show here on 3CR, 8:55am. My name is Shane, I'm here with Fiona. How is your week so far, Fiona?
Apart from the bus replacements on the train line, good.
So apart from everything that's happened this week so far.
You know when you unexpectedly have to, things take longer on public transport?
It's annoying. Oh, I can't relate.
Oh, but luckily I was listening to 3CR on the Community Plus radio app, which was a relief. It gave me something to listen to while I was stuck on the bus.
Great. What did you learn on 3CR this morning?
What did I learn? I listened to Women on the Line. It was a really good interview with Chelsea Wittargo's, talking about her new book. There was some good interviews on Monday Breakfast about the forest movement, something close to my heart. And what else was there? Oh, Migrant Workers Centre. It was all very informative, a very informative morning.
It sounds great.
Listen back on 3CR if you want.
Listeners might find this confusing because we're recording on Monday morning and this show will go to air on Wednesday afternoon. So if you're wondering why it's so morning oriented, that's why.
That's why.
But Fiona, why don't you tell the listeners about who we spoke to for this week's show?
Yeah, so today we've got an interview with Maggie Shambrook, who is the convener and one of the founding members of the Housing Older Women Movement in Queensland. She is a powerhouse and she does so much great work to raise awareness and advocate for better housing for older people, particularly older women in Queensland. She has a whole movement behind her, but she really does a lot of the work as a volunteer, slogging away, trying to get change bit by bit. And as is common with lots of groups of people that have experienced housing stress and homelessness, membership fluctuates according to people's health and well-being. And we certainly see that at HAG with some of our member groups as well. People drop off and their capacity changes when they have health, especially when they've got insecure housing. So Maggie, know the movement itself has had those issues as well. But despite that, they're a really amazing group of older women in Queensland. And there's a roundtable coming up, which Maggie's going to tell us all about with the Queensland government. So
coming up and yet already finished by the time you're listening to this episode.
We're in a time warp, but trust me, it'll all make sense in time. Anyway, we'll go straight to Maggie and then we'll come back after that. I'm joined by Maggie Shambrook from the Housing Older Women Movement in Queensland. How are you going today, Maggie?
I'm great. Thanks, Fiona.
So firstly, could you tell us a little bit about who the Housing Older Women Movement are and what it is that you do?
Yes. We formed in 2019 or early 2020 with support from Queensland Shelter and HAG, Housing for the Aged Action Group. It was wonderful to have that support, and we formed a peer-led organisation, and we wanted to have a movement of people who shared a rather sad commonality, and that is that we all experience some level of housing precarity and or homelessness. So we were passionate advocates for change, bringing about getting a better analysis about why this was happening to so many of us, and what we could do about it. And so that's what we've been doing the last 5 years, is to coming up with a good analysis and an understanding of what are some ways forward.
And that is something that I really love about your writing and what you say in your movement, and that is, I guess, the structural analysis of housing stress and homelessness and how people tend to blame themselves or get blamed for making bad choices or whatever. But yep, your analysis is very much around what's been going on systemically. Would you be able to talk a little bit about what you think the drivers are for housing stress and homelessness for older women?
Yes, yes. I think it's, thanks Fiona, it's an intersection really of a number of phenomena. I think it's gender inequity, And that's been occurring for women born in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and it carried on through our lifetimes. And it's been expressed in terms of labour force participation, in terms of domestic, unpaid domestic and family care work, a whole range of things that have occurred in the absence of policy that addressed gender inequity. There were very little responses until the last 20 or 30 years, but most of us have lived a lifetime of conventional lives and raising families and or being involved in the raising of families in some form or another, and care for, you know, folk within our family units. So there's that into almost an intergenerational gender inequity, which, you know, this still continues today. The other is neoliberalist policy or theory, really, that underpinned housing policy in Australia. So we saw a shift to privatising, greater privatisation of rental in the 1990s, probably a bit earlier, but that's continued, and we underwrote the expansion of private rental in Australia, which had previously been a short-term transitional option for people before they went into home ownership. But as home ownership now becomes less attainable because of the costs involved, what we've done as a nation is we've underwritten the investment, the turning of really housing into an investment. So it's a wealth generation rather than a housing service. And that wealth generation is supported in a range of ways by the public purse. We think there are estimates up to $79 billion a year by an economist, that's not me saying that, Gary Flommenhurt uses that figure. Other figures are less. It just depends what you include, as you know, in any statistic. But that's a lot of underwriting, you know, of negative gearing, capital gains tax, Commonwealth rent assistance, a whole range of benefits that flow to the investment sector. And at the same time, governments withdrew from the provision of social and affordable housing. So that combination of factors really has put a lot of low to medium income people in dire straits, really, in terms of housing choice and availability and affordability.
And
so there's that factor, and ageism is the other I want to mention.
Definitely.
The trend of ageism, which is pretty horrific when you experience it.
Absolutely.
And,
ageism is a big thing.
It is.
Yeah, and it's not often spoken about.
Fairly invisible too, isn't it? It's really hard until it impacts you. You don't really see it. You hear it sometimes a lot, you know, in media and elsewhere, but you don't. It's subtle in its, you know, in its activity,
it
in its flow, and its impacts.
Absolutely. Now, a couple of years ago, actually, it was about this time last year, I think, we released a report with Swinburne University, and we looked at all of the national data and state-by-state data on a number of older renters, and we found that Southeast Queensland in particular is a real hotspot for renters, for older renters in particular. And you've recently done a survey of your members across Queensland. How is the rental crisis and the lack of available housing impacting on people who completed the survey and on your members?
Yes, we have a survey on our website if others would like to complete it. It's a fairly comprehensive survey. And its aim was actually to better understand the housing aspirations of the respondents to the questionnaire. The crisis and impact on people, though, not so much through the survey, although there is some some evidence there about that impact. The impact that we are hearing most about is from a wonderful service that we have in Queensland, are very fortunate to have, as a result of our advocacy and support from HAG and Q Shelter, to get what's called the Housing Older Women Support Service. We don't run it, or some people who are involved with the movement volunteer with it. But the figures we're hearing in terms of the demand on that service are remarkable. This tsunami has been a term used, this tsunami of women who for the first time in their lives are experiencing an inability to find a place to live is pretty shocking, really. The mental health implications and implications for well-being are serious and profound and in some instances, you know, life-threatening, really. And so that those numbers will continue to grow and in volume until 2060, until all of the baby boomers and the generations behind us move through our lives. So we've got a lot to face over the next, you know, 20 or 30 years, and already those women have been lining up at services, or not, because a lot of them do not line up at services. But when they are brave enough and desperate enough, I guess, sometimes to do so, there are few options available. And hostels and other temporary crisis type accommodation is really very unsatisfactory, really, for a lot of the people experiencing this for the first time in their lives, really.
Mm, absolutely. Now, you, as an incredibly strong advocate for the movement, have managed to secure a roundtable with the newly elected housing minister, which is an incredible achievement. And that's, I should say that we're recording this on Monday, but by the time this goes to air, we will have already had the roundtable, which is on Tuesday. So let's talk a little bit about what the roundtable is, who's going, and what you hope to achieve from it.
Yes, well, we do have a wonderful mix, as we've always maintained in the movement, of both women affected and supporters, so academics, people with special kind of skills in architecture, project development, a whole range of different supports, which is a wonderful thing, and we couldn't do what we do without that voluntary effort of so many, and organisational support from, you know, organisations like HUG and Q Shelter and so on. The roundtable aims to look at what we think is a key and very important solution to not just the provision of a home for people, but the provision of opportunities for people to maybe have a shared ownership arrangement, and most importantly, to live in a home forever, until they no longer wish to do so or cannot do so. And that security of tenure and affordable housing held in perpetuity, we believe, can be a wonderful new option for a lot of people to have a home. And the people coming to the roundtable, and we're hoping that the minister, who really was very interested when we met with him earlier in the year to better understand the concept of and the movement of community-led housing, which in other parts of the world, you know, form up to 10 to 15 to 20% of the housing available in particular nations around the world. But Australia has really, and Queensland has very little, but Australia overall only has 1 or 2% of this type of housing. And really the term itself, community-led, indicates the mix of people who'll be present tomorrow. We are hoping, and we do have federal government, state government and local government participation, because this housing, for it to grow as a real choice and option in Queensland in particular, but elsewhere in the nation, builds on the good work of many people who've been, you know, working away at this type of housing development for many years. We want to help fast-track that development with better top-down support from governments at all levels. And in addition to that, of course, we need the academics to give us the evidence to support. And there is plenty of great work being done in the research sector that gives evidence to this type of housing. I just heard this morning that the latest survey of Australia's health and well-being is showing that figures are pointing the wrong way in terms of our satisfaction and our well-being. We believe that as we build community with this type of housing, it provides the opportunity for informal care processes to happen and for a range of other really significant life and well-being factors to be expressed, really. So that's sort of what we're hoping that we'll do, is get more engagement from state government and local government and federal government, not to have them create policy in a vacuum, but to create policy through a demonstration and other, you know, through a number of demonstration projects would be wonderful. And we really have been trying to engage them around this theme and topic now for quite some time, and are delighted that they're coming to the table to have a listen. And we're very pleased that wonderful people like yourself and Wendy Stone and other academics and Rachel Ong and others will be present to provide the minister with high quality information.
Yeah, and I guess for listeners, it might be difficult to explain in a nutshell, but what is community-led housing, and what's the difference between that and other types of housing that do exist?
Well, the key difference is that it's housing that's developed and held. It's non-speculative housing held in perpetuity, that is forever, as affordable housing, or for at least an agreed number of decades, so that the wealth that and health that is generated in housings typologies like co-housing models. So you have a balance between shared spaces and private spaces, and those are in separate dwellings and not under the one roof necessarily at all. And you have common shared spaces. You have community land trusts is another. You have co-living arrangements, so where you can all live under the one roof, but have really good design, so you're both private and public lives are in balance. So you don't have to be, living in community all the time. You just have an opportunity to go and share a meal or share a laundry or share other amenities. And that's true with co-housing as well, where you have a separate common amenity. And cooperatives are kind of the structure that often sits across these different housing types. Inclusionary zoning projects are another that fit within this, where, you know, you can ensure that the development that occurs in a larger building project, there's areas set aside for this type of housing so that it's held in perpetuity and is affordable and accessible. And the other thing about it is that it has governance structures that involve the residents in decision making, which is really, really important when we have a lot to contribute as both older people and linking that to different types of tenure, and intergenerational tenures are a really key feature of many of this type of housing. Essential workers being involved as well. We don't want a neighbourhood of 80-year-olds and no one's able to climb the ladder to fix the light bulb. You know, that's not much fun. So we love, you know, a lot of us. Not everyone can live with families and children, but a lot of people do want to live in just what is, a demographically similar neighbourhood type environment rather than specialist aged or other environments. However, there is space also for those types of developments as well. If people want to share a particular interest and don't want to live in a more generic neighbourhood type environment. So I think what's unique about it is that it is community-led, so the people involved in it are making the decisions about what they create, and the variables are huge. There's so many different ways that can be expressed innovatively, creatively, and it's an exciting way to create housing, actually. But we do need state, federal and local government to ensure that the integration of this type of housing into communities and in rural and remote areas, in First Nations areas of their home, in urban settings and high density situations, that this type of housing can offer a real alternative that is nurturing and supportive and growth fulfilling.
And
it's not without its challenges, though. I don't mean to romanticise it. It has its challenges.
Absolutely. And my understanding is that this type of housing doesn't really exist in Queensland, or not at scale. And
no.
if there is this kind of, you know, conversation that starts to occur between the three levels of government at this roundtable that you've pulled together, perhaps
yep.
Queensland will lead the way in this type of housing. Is that something that you're hoping to achieve from the roundtable?
Well, in the sense that we hope that it takes a lead in relation to the policy kind of pathways that are needed to make this housing happen at a much faster rate, at scalable and replicable ways, that aspects of it can be rolled out. Never forgetting, though, that the community itself involved in the design and development of this are those that take the leadership. We don't want government to come in and take over and do things that actually don't nurture that community engagement process. That's at the heart of it, and we must keep a community-led focus. If state, local and federal governments can clear the pathways for this development to occur at scale and to be replicated, yes, I think we will have cracked a nut that's been really difficult to crack, you know, in the rest of the country, but particularly in Queensland. So we're really excited about that possibility.
Yeah, it's really exciting times. So for people who maybe they live in Queensland and they might like to get involved in the Housing Older Women movement, or perhaps they just want to support your work in other ways,
yes.
What's the best way for people to connect with you and the work that you do?
Well, I know it's terrible. Everyone says, oh, go to a website. But it's actually quite useful if you're able to do that. If you're not able to do that, if you can perhaps give in other parts of the country, if you just could email info@housingolderwomen.org.au, that would be wonderful. I could give out a telephone number, but I'm happy to do so if someone is really keen to know more and how we can advance that. So perhaps if I leave that with you, Fiona, and they can contact your radio station and get my number. It could even be on the website somewhere. I don't know, but if you're able to access that technology. I'd suggest going to www.housingolderwomen.org.au.
That's great, Maggie. And we might touch base with you again after the roundtables occurred to see how things went with it and the next steps. But for now, is there anything else you'd like listeners to know?
I'm just glad that I have the opportunity to talk with you about different types of housing. We don't have to be stuck with the limited choices that we have available now. Some of them, I guess, are okay and work well enough. But for those that aren't satisfied and the housing doesn't meet their aspirations, we really need your support. Talk to your local members and say, hey, I heard this woman talking about community-led housing. What is it? How can we get more of it? So please talk to your local member about it, because we really need a groundswell of support for this to keep building, so that politicians, take notice and also find out from our website. There's a whole list of these types of organisations and that have been doing wonderful housing provision for now many, many years, so that are under the umbrella of community-led housing. So we have a little manual or a list, if you like, of those sorts of organisations all over Australia. So go and check them out. Find out what's happening in your neighbourhoods and your communities and how you can get involved.
That's perfect, Maggie. Thanks so much for your time today.
You're welcome. Thanks, Fiona, for the opportunity. All the best. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Are you stressed about your home loan? Right now, more Victorians than ever are stressed about home loan repayments. If you're going through a period of temporary financial hardship, you can ask your lender for hardship assistance. Lenders can agree to reduce your interest rate, extend the term of your loan, freeze interest, put a temporary hold on payments, or reduce your payments. If you only own one property that you live in, and either you are affected by family violence or your household earnings are less than $75,000, contact Mortgage Stress Victoria for free help from a lawyer, social worker, or financial counsellor on 1800 572 292 or www.mortgagestress.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to the Raise the Roof, the Housing for the Age Action Group show on 3CR, and we are done for another week. So Fiona's looking at me very strange, as if this is a crazy thing for me to say, but I think that's right. That's where we're at in the show, isn't it?
It's true. We're at the end.
So if you want to get in touch with us, if you want to get in touch with HAG because you're an older Victorian with a housing issue, the best number to call is 1300 765 178. That's 1300 765 178. If you want to get in touch because you're interested in some of the working groups or policy stuff or admin or joining, becoming a member or any of that sort of thing, 96547389. That's 96547389. And that's it.
We're going out with a song. And the song is by Nadia Reid and it is called Not Giving Out. We'll see you next time.
I hope this is a good song, Fiona. I can't believe I let you pick these songs without any input.
Okay. Let's go out with that song now.
Great.
Bye.
Bye.
Am I awake now? The truth is ours. Write what you like about me. I'm not giving it out no more. I'm totally found in your light. Totally blinded. I can go higher. I can go higher. Help me, help me know where I am now. The time and space are blurred to one. But I wanna get to know you. I wanna feel it. Get back, get right. Yeah.